Chapter 24. Crimea, who ate an immense deal too much, and never took his eyes off his plate, except when Giglio, who was carving a goose, sent a quantity of stuffing and onion sauce into one of them. Giglio only burst out a laughing as the Crimean prince wiped his shirt front and face with his scented pocket handkerchief. He did not make Prince Bulbo any apology. When the prince looked at him, Giglio would not look that way. When Prince Bulbo said, "Prince Giglio, may I have the honor of taking a glass of wine with you?" Giglio wouldn't answer. All his talk and his eyes were for Countess Gruffanuff, who you may be sure was pleased with Giglio's attentions, the vain old creature. When he was not complimenting her, he was making fun of Prince Bulbo, so loud that Gruffanuff was always tapping him with her fan, and saying, "Oh, you satirical prince. Oh, fie, the prince will hear. I don't mind," says Giglio, louder still. The king and queen luckily did not hear, for her majesty was a little deaf, and the king thought so much about his own dinner, and, besides, made such a dreadful noise, hobgobbling and eating it, that he heard nothing else. After dinner, his majesty and the queen went to sleep in their armchairs. This was the time when Giglio began his tricks with Prince Bulbo, plying that young gentleman with port, sherry, Madeira, champagne, Marsala, cherry brandy, and pale ale, of all of which Master Bulbo drank without stint. But in plying his guest, Giglio was obliged to drink himself, and, I am sorry to say, took more than was good for him, so that the young men were very noisy, rude, and foolish when they joined the ladies after dinner. And dearly did they pay for that imprudence, as now, my darlings, you shall hear. Bulbo went and sat by the piano, where Angelica was playing and singing, and he sang out of tune, and he upset the coffee when the footman brought it, and he laughed out of place, and talked absurdly, and fell asleep and snored horridly. Boo, the nasty pig! But as he lay there stretched on the pink satin sofa, Angelica still persisted in thinking him the most beautiful of human beings. No doubt the magic rose which Bulbo wore caused this infatuation on Angelica's part, but is she the first young woman who has thought a silly fellow charming? Giglio must go and sit by Gruffanuff, whose old face he too, every moment began to find more lovely. He paid the most outrageous compliments to her. There never was such a darling. Older than he was? Fiddle-de-dee. He would marry her, he would, have nothing but her. To marry the heir to the throne. Here was a chance. The artful hussy actually got a sheet of paper, and wrote upon it, "This is to give notice that I, Giglio, only son of Savio, King of Paphlagonia, hereby promise to marry the charming and virtuous Barbara Griselda Countess Gruffanuff, and widow of the late Jenkins Gruffanuff Esquire." "What is it you are writing, you charming Gruffy?" says Giglio, who was lolling on the sofa by the writing table. "Only an order for you to sign, dear prince, for giving coals and blankets to the poor this cold weather. Look. The king and queen are both asleep, and your royal highness's order will do." So Giglio, who was very good-natured, as Gruffy well knew, signed the order immediately, and, when this he had it in her pocket, you may fancy what airs she gave herself. She was ready to flounce out of the room before the queen herself, as now she was the wife of the rightful king of Paphlagonia. She would not speak to Glumboso, whom she thought a brute, for depriving her dear husband of the crown. And when candles came, and as he had helped to undress the queen and princess, she went into her own room, and actually practiced on the sheet of paper, "Griselda Paphlagonia, Barbara Regina, Griselda Barbara, Paph. Reg. And I don't know what signatures besides, against the day when she should be queen forsooth. Ix." How Betsinda got the warming pan. Little Betsinda came in to put Gruffanuff's hair in papers, and the Countess was so pleased that, for a wonder, she complimented Betsinda. "Betsinda," she said, "you dressed my hair very nicely today. I promised you a little present. Here are 5 SH. No, here is a pretty little ring that I picked, that I have had some time. and she gave Basinda the ring as he had picked up in the court. It fitted Basinda exactly. "It's like the ring the princess used to wear," says the maid. "No such thing," says Gruffanuff. "I have had it this ever so long. There, tuck me up quite comfortable. And now, as it's a very cold night, the snow was beating in at the window, you may go and warm dear Prince Giglio's bed, like a good girl, and then you may unrip my green silk, and then you can just do me up a little cap for the morning, and then you can mend that hole in my silk stocking, and then you can go to bed, Basinda. Mind, I shall want my cup of tea at 5 o'clock in the morning. I suppose I had best warm both the young gentlemen's beds, ma'am," says Basinda. Gruffanuff, for reply, said, "Ho ho! Gra-ha-hoo! Hom-ro!" In fact, she was snoring sound asleep. Her room, you know, is next to the king and queen, and the princess is next to them. So pretty Basinda went away for the coals to the kitchen, and filled the royal warming pan. Now, she was a very kind, very civil, pretty girl, but there must have been something very captivating about her this evening, for all the women in the servants' hall began to scold and abuse her. The housekeeper said she was a pert, stuck-up thing. The upper housemaid asked, "How dare she wear such ringlets and ribbons? It was quite improper." The cook, for there was a woman cook as well as a man cook, said to the kitchen maid that she never could see anything in that creature. But as for the men, every one of them, coachman, John, Buttons, the page, and Monsieur, the Prince of Crim Tartary's valet, started up and said, "My eyes! Oh mussy! What a pretty girl Basinda is! Oh Gemini! Oh seal! Hands off! None of your impertinence, you vulgar, low people," says Basinda, walking off with her pan of coals. She heard the young gentleman playing at billiards as she went upstairs. First to Prince Giglio's bed, which she warmed, and then to Prince Bulbo's room. He came in just as he had done, and as soon as he saw her, "Oh, oh, 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 what a beautiful creature you are! You angel, you pari, you rosebud, let me be thy bulbo too. Fly to the desert, fly with me. I never saw a young gazelle too glad me with its dark blue eye that had eyes like thine. Thou nymph of beauty, take this young heart. A truer never did itself sustain within a soldier's waistcoat. Be mine, be mine, be princess of Crim Tartary. My royal father will approve our union. And, as for that little carroty-haired Angelica, I do not care a fig for her anymore. Go away, your royal highness, and go to bed please," said Basinda, with the warming pan. But Bulbo said, "No, never, till thou swearest to be mine, thou lovely, blushing chambermaid divine. Here, at thy feet, the royal Bulbo lies, the trembling captive of Basinda's eyes." And he went on, making himself so absurd and ridiculous, that Basinda, who was full of fun, gave him a touch with the warming pan, which, I promise you, made him cry, "Oh, oh, oh," in a very different manner. Prince Bulbo made such a noise that Prince Giglio, who heard him from the next room, came in to see what was the matter. As soon as he saw what was taking place, Giglio, in a fury, rushed on Bulbo, kicked him in the rudest manner up to the ceiling, and went on kicking him till his hair was quite out of curl. Poor Basinda did not know whether to laugh or to cry. The kicking certainly must hurt the prince, but then he looked so droll. When Giglio had done knocking him up and down to the ground, and whilst he went into a corner rubbing himself, what do you think Giglio does? He goes down on his own knees to Basinda, takes her hand, begs her to accept his heart, and offers to marry her that moment. Fancy Basinda's condition, who had been in love with the prince ever since she first saw him in the palace garden, when she was quite a little child. "Oh, divine Basinda," says the prince, "how have I lived 15 years in thy company without seeing thy perfections? What woman in all Europe, Asia, Africa, and America, nay, in Australia, only it is not yet discovered, can presume to be thy equal? Angelica? Pish! Gruffin of Fu. The queen? Ha, ha. Thou art my queen. Thou art the real Angelica, because thou art really angelic. Oh, prince. I am but a poor chambermaid, says Betsinda, looking, however, very much pleased. Didst thou not tend me in my sickness, when all forsook me, continues Giglio. Did not thy gentle hand smooth my pillow, and bring me jelly and roast chicken? Yes, dear prince, I did, says Betsinda, and I sewed your royal highness's shirt buttons onto, if you please, your royal highness, cries this artless maiden. When poor Prince Bulbo, who was now madly in love with Betsinda, heard this declaration, when he saw the unmistakable glances which he flung upon Giglio, Bulbo began to cry bitterly, and tore quantities of hair out of his head, till it all covered the room like so much tow. Betsinda had left the warming pan on the floor, while the princes were going on with their conversation, and as they began now to quarrel, and be very fierce with one another, she thought proper to run away. You great big blubbering booby, tearing your hair in the corner there, of course you will give me satisfaction for insulting Betsinda. You dare to kneel down at Princess Giglio's knees and kiss her hand. She's not Princess Giglio. Roars out Bulbo. He shall be Princess Bulbo, no other shall be Princess Bulbo. You are engaged to my cousin. Bellows out Giglio. I hate your cousin, says Bulbo. You shall give me satisfaction for insulting her. Cries Giglio in a fury. I'll have your life. I'll run you through. I'll cut your throat. I'll blow your brains out. I'll knock your head off. I'll send a friend to you in the morning. I'll send a bullet into you in the afternoon. We'll meet again, says Giglio, shaking his fist in Bulbo's face, and seizing up the warming pan, he kissed it, because, forsooth, Betsinda had carried it, and rushed downstairs. What should he see on the landing, but his majesty talking to Betsinda, whom he called by all sorts of fond names. His Majesty had heard a row in the building, so he stated, and smelling something burning, had come out to see what the matter was. It's the young gentleman smoking, perhaps, sir, says Betsinda. Charming chambermaid, says the king, like all the rest of them, never mind the young men. Turn thy eyes on a middle-aged autocrat, who has been considered not ill-looking in his time. Oh, sir, what will Her Majesty say? Cries Betsinda. Her Majesty! Laughs the monarch. Her Majesty be hanged. Am I not autocrat of Paphlagonia? Have I not blocks, ropes, axes, hangman, Runs not a river by my palace wall? Have I not sacks to sew up wives withal? Say but the word, that thou wilt be mine own, your mistress straightway in a sack is sewn, and thou the sharer of my heart and throne. When Giglio heard these atrocious sentiments, he forgot the respect usually paid to royalty, lifted up the warming pan, and knocked down the king as flat as a pancake, after which, Master Giglio took to his heels and ran away, and Betsinda went off screaming, and the queen, Gruffanuff, and the princess, all came out of their rooms. Fancy their feelings on beholding their husband, father, sovereign, in this posture. X how King Valoroso was in a dreadful passion. As soon as the coals began to burn him, the king came to himself and stood up. Oh, my captain of the guards, His Majesty exclaimed, stamping his royal feet with rage. Oh, piteous spectacle, the king's nose was bent quite crooked by the blow of Prince Giglio. His Majesty ground his teeth with rage. Heads off, he said. Taking a death warrant out of his dressing gown pocket, heads off, good heads off, seize upon the prince. Thou'lt find him in his chamber to pair up. But now he dared, with sacrilegious hand, to strike the sacred nightcap of a king heads off, and floor me with a warming pan. Away, no more demur, the villain dies. See it be done, or else, H'm. Mind thine own eyes. And followed by the ladies, and lifting up the tails of his dressing gown, the king entered his own apartment. Captain Etzoff was very much affected, having a sincere love for Giglio. Poor Giglio, he said, the tears rolling over his manly face and dripping down his mustachios. My noble young prince, is it my hand must lead thee to death? Lead him to fiddlestick, Etzoff, said a female voice. It was Gruffanuff, who had come out in her dressing gown when she heard the noise. He king said you were to hang the prince. Well, hang the prince. I don't understand you, says Etzoff, who was not a very clever man. You gaby, he didn't say which prince, says Gruffanuff. No, he didn't say which, certainly, said Etzoff. Well then, take Bulbo and hang him. When Captain Etzoff heard this, he began to dance about for joy. Obedience is a soldier's honor, says he. Prince Bulbo's head will do capitally, and he went to arrest the prince the very first thing next morning. He knocked at the door. Who's there? Says Bulbo. Captain Etzoff? Step in, pray, my good captain. I'm delighted to see you. I have been expecting you. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.